9 Billion Names of God by Arthur C. Clarke.
This is a slightly unusual request,
said Dr. Wagner, with what he hoped was a commendable restraint.
As far as I know, it's the first time anyone's ever been asked to supply a Tibetan monastery with an automated sequence computer. I don't wish to be inquisitive, but I should hardly have thought that your, establishment had much use for such a machine. Could you explain just what you intend to do with it?
Gladly,
replied the Lama, readjusting his silk robes and carefully putting away the slide rule he had been using for currency conversions.
Your Mach 5 computer can carry out any routine mathematical operation involving up to 10 digits. However, for our work, we are interested in letters, not numbers. As we wish to modify the output circuits, the machine will be printing columns of words, not figures.
I don't quite understand.
This is a project on which we have been working for the last 3 centuries, since the Lamazari was founded. In fact, it is somewhat alien to your way of thought, so I hope you will listen with an open mind while I explain it.
Naturally.
It is quite simple. We have been compiling a list which will contain all possible names of God.
I beg your pardon?
We have reason to believe that all such names can be written with not more than 9 letters in an alphabet we have devised.
And you've been doing this for 3 centuries?
Yes. We expected it would take about 15,000 years to complete the task.
Dr. Wagner looked a little dazed.
Oh, now I see why you want to hire one of our machines, but what exactly is the purpose of this project?
The Lama hesitated for a fraction of a second, and Wagner wondered if he had offended him. If so, there was no trace of annoyance in the reply.
Call it ritual, if you like. But it's a fundamental part of our belief. All of the names of the Supreme Being, God, Jehovah, Allah, and so on, they are only man-made labels. There is a philosophical problem of some difficulty here, which I do not propose to discuss. But somewhere among all the possible combinations of letters that can occur are what one may call the real names of God. By systematic permutation, we have been trying to list them all.
I see. You've been starting at A, 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 and working your way up to Z, 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 Z.
Exactly. Though we use a special alphabet of our own, modifying the electromagnetic typewriters to deal with this is, of course, trivial. A rather more interesting problem is that of devising suitable circuits to eliminate ridiculous combinations. For instance, no letter must occur more than 3 times in succession.
3? Surely you mean 2.
3 is correct. I'm afraid it would take too long to explain why, even if you understood our language.
I'm sure it would,
said Wagner hastily.
Please go on.
Luckily, it will be a simple matter to adapt your automated sequence computer for this work, since once it has been programmed properly, it will permute each letter in turn and print the result. What would have taken us 15,000 years, it will be able to do in 100 days.
Dr. Wagner was scarcely conscious of the faint sounds from the Manhattan streets far below. He was in a different world. A world of natural, not man-made mountains. High up in the remote areas, these monks had been patiently at work. Was there any limit to the follies of mankind? Still, he must give no hint of his inner thought. The customer was always right.
There's no doubt that we can modify the Mach 5 to print lists of this nature,
replied the doctor.
I'm much more worried about the problem of installation and maintenance. Getting out to Tibet these days isn't going to be easy.
We can arrange that. The components are small enough to travel by air. That is one reason why we chose your machine. If you can get them to India, we'll provide transport from there.
And you want to hire 2 of our engineers?
Yes, for the 3 months that the project should occupy.
I've no doubt the personnel can manage that.
Dr. Wagner scribbled a note on his desk pad.
But there's just two other points.
Before he could finish his sentence, the Lama had produced a small slip of paper.
This is my certified credit balance at Asiatic Bank.
Thank you, it appears to be adequate. The second matter is so trivial that I hesitate to even mention it. But it's surprising how often these things get overlooked. What source of electrical energy do you have?
A diesel generator providing 50 kilowatts at 110 volts. It was installed about 5 years ago, and it is quite reliable. It's made life at the Lamazari much more comfortable. But of course, it was really installed to provide power for the motors driving the prayer wheels.
Of course, I should have thought of that.
The view from the parapet was vertiginous. But in time, one gets used to anything. After 3 months, George Hanley was not impressed by the 2,000-foot swoop into the abyss or the remote checkerboard of fields in the valley below. He was leaning against the wind-smooth stones and staring morosely at the distant mountains whose names he'd never bothered to discover. This, thought George, was the craziest thing that had ever happened to him. Project Shangri-La, some wit back at the labs had christened it. For weeks now, the Mark V had been churning out acres of sheets covered with gibberish. Patiently, inexorably, the computer had been rearranging letters in all their possible combinations, exhausting each class before going on to the next. As the sheets had emerged from the electromagnetic typewriters, the monks had carefully cut them up and pasted them into enormous books. In just another week, heaven be praised, they would have finished. Just what obscure calculations had convinced the monks that they needn't bother to go on to words of 10, 20, or 100 letters, George didn't know. One of his reoccurring nightmares was that there would be some change of plan, and that the High Lama, whom they'd naturally called Sam Jaff, though he didn't look a bit like him, would suddenly announce that the project had been extended to approximately AD 2060. They were quite capable of it. George heard the heavy wooden door slam in the wind as Chuck came onto the parapet beside him. As usual, Chuck was smoking one of the cigars that made him so popular with the monks, who it seemed were quite willing to embrace all the minor and most of the major pleasures of life. That was one thing in their favor. They might be crazy, but they weren't blue noses.
Listen, George, said Chuck urgently. I've learned something that means trouble.
What's wrong? Isn't the machine behaving?
That was the worst contingency George could imagine. It might delay his return, and nothing could be more horrible. The way he felt now, even the sight of a TV commercial would have seemed like a manna from heaven. At least it would be some link with home.
No, it's nothing like that.
Chuck settled himself on the parapet, which was unusual because normally he was scared of the drop.
I've just found out what this is all about.
What do you mean? I thought we knew.
Sure, we knew what the monks were trying to do, but we didn't know why. It's the craziest thing.
Tell me something I don't know,
growled George.
But old Sam's just come clean with me. You know the way he drops in every afternoon to watch the sheets roll out? Well, this time he seemed rather excited, or at least near as he'll ever get to it. When I told him that we're on the last cycle, he asked me, in that cute English accent of his, if he'd ever wondered what they were trying to do. I said,
sure, and he told me about it. Yeah, go on.
Well, they believe that when they've listed all his names, and they reckon that there are about 9 billion of them, God's purpose will have been achieved. The human race will have finished what it was created to do, and there won't be any point in carrying on. Indeed, the very idea to carry on is something like blasphemy.
Then what do they expect us to do, commit suicide?
There's not really any need for that. When the list's completed, God sort of steps in and simply winds things up, like bingo.
Oh, I get it.
When we finish our job, it'll be the end of the world.
Chuck gave a little nervous laugh.
That's just what I said to Sam. And do you know what happened? He looked at me in a very queer way, like I'd been stupid in class or something, and said, it's nothing as trivial as that.
George thought this over for a moment,
That's what I call taking the wide view, he said presently. But what do you suppose we do about it? I don't see that it makes the slightest difference to us. After all, we already knew that they were crazy. Yes, but don't you see what may happen? When the list's complete and the last trumpet doesn't blow, or whatever it is they expect, we may get the blame. It's our machine they've been using. I don't like the situation one bit.
I see. You've got a point there. But this sort of thing's happened before. When I was a kid in Louisiana, we had a crackpot preacher who once said the world was going to end by next Sunday. Hundreds of people believed him. They even sold their homes. Yet when nothing happened, they didn't turn out nasty as you'd expect. They just decided he'd made a mistake in his calculations and went right on believing. I guess some of them still do.
Well, this isn't Louisiana, in case you hadn't noticed. There are just two of us and 100 of these monks. I like them, but I'll be sorry for old Sam when his life work backfires on him. But all the same, I wish I was somewhere else.
I've been wishing that for weeks. There's nothing we can do until the contract's finished, and transport arrives to fly us out.
Of course, said Chuck thoughtfully.
We could try a little bit of sabotage. Like hell we could. That'd just make things worse.
That's not the way I meant. Look at it like this. The machine will finish its run 4 days from now, on the present 24-hour day basis. The transport calls in a week.
Okay, all we need to do is find something that needs replacing during one of the overhaul periods. Something that'll hold up the works for a couple of days. We'll fix it, of course, but not too quickly. We time matters properly. We can be down at the airfield when the last name pops out of the register. They won't be able to catch us then.
I don't like it, said George.
It'd be the first time I'd ever walked out on a job. Besides, it would make them suspicious. No, I'll just sit tight and take what comes.
And he still didn't like it, 7 days later, as the tough little mountain ponies carried them down the winding road.
And don't you think I'm running away because I'm afraid. I'm just sorry for those poor old guys up there. And I don't want to be around when they find out what suckers they've been. I wonder how Sam will take it.
Funny, replied Chuck.
But when I said goodbye, I got the idea that he knew we were walking out on him. And he didn't really care because he knew the machine was running smoothly and that the job would be finished soon. After that, well, of course, for him, there just isn't any after that.
George turned in his saddle and stared back up at the mountain road. This was the last place from which one could get a clear view of the Lomazzeri. The squat, angular buildings were silhouetted against the afterglow of the sunset. Here and there, lights gleamed like portholes in the side of an ocean liner. Electric lights, of course, sharing the same circuit as the Mark V. How much longer would they share it, wondered George. Would the monks smash up their computer in rage and disappointment? Or would they just sit down quietly and begin their calculations all over again? He knew exactly what was happening on the mountain at this very moment. The High Lama and his assistants would be sitting in their silk robes, inspecting the sheets, as the junior monks carried them away from the typewriters and pasted them into their great volumes. No one would be saying anything. The only sound would be the incessant patter, the never-ending rainstorm of the keys hitting the paper, for the Mark V itself was utterly silent. There she is, called Chuck, pointing down the valley. Ain't she beautiful? She certainly was, thought George. The battered old DC-3 lay at the end of the runway like a tiny silver cross. In 2 hours, she would be bearing them away to freedom and sanity. It was a thought worth savoring, like a fine liquor. George let it roll around in his mind as the pony trudged patiently down the slope. The swift night of the high Himalayas was now almost upon them. Fortunately, the road was very good, as roads went in that region, and they were both carrying torches. There was not the slightest danger, only a certain discomfort from the bitter cold. The sky overhead was perfectly clear and ablaze with the familiar, friendly stars. At least there would be no risk, thought George, of the pilot being unable to take off because of the weather conditions. That had been his only remaining worry. He began to sing, but gave up after a while. This vast arena of mountains, gleaming like whitely hooded ghosts on every side, did not encourage such ebullience. Presently, George glanced at his watch.
Should be there in about an hour,
George called back over his shoulder to Chuck. Then he added in an afterthought,
I wonder if the computer's finished its run. It was due about now.
Chuck didn't reply, so George swung around in his saddle. He could just see Chuck's face, a white oval, turned towards the sky.
Look,
whispered Chuck, and George lifted his eyes to heaven. There is always a last time for everything. Overhead, without any fuss, the stars were going out.